Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution with Juan McCartney is sponsored by Fidelity Bank Bahamas, J.S. Johnson, Commonwealth Bank, Burger King, Atlantis Paradise Island, Marlin Marine, Popeyes, and the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas.
Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Revolution here on Guardian Radio. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. We're going to have an open line type situation today. You can call me, message me about stuff that's going on or things that are concerning to you, or we could possibly address. Doesn't have to be anything too incredibly complex, so we're going to do that. You can, you know, call me, complain about the Haitians, etc., things that you all enjoy doing, and we can go from there. Now, I have a couple of things that I want to deal with, but by all means, you could feel free to call me and text as well. So the House of Assembly last night, I'm trying to wonder where it is. I don't understand why it is difficult to grasp concepts that are quite simple in nature, right? And here's what I mean. So yesterday, and Halston Mutri, who's terrible at this, right, gets in another tiff about which atheist claims civil service. It's really stupid stuff, right? But Don Saunders is sitting in the chair during the deputy speaker, is sitting in the chair during the budget debate. And he and Von Miller is giving his presentation, you know, and Von Miller is slamming the FNM, et cetera. And he goes, you know, well, crime is on the rise, you know? And Frankie Campbell gets, I don't know what's, anyway. Frankie Campbell gets up and goes, no, that's not true. That's a misleader. Crime is down and all stuff like that. And so what Brave Davis is trying to explain it. So Don Saunders is saying to prove it, right? And he's saying, look, Miller's saying, listen, Marvin Dames just yesterday stood up in here and said murders are up and armed robberies are up. Categories of crime are up. What are you talking about? And so he says, well, prove it, right? So now you have to prove what is on the record of the Hansard to the person sitting in the speaker's chair. And Mutri did, and I'll tell you what else happened. Then Brave Davis gets up, right, and says, this is an here's an article in the Nassau Guardian that quotes the Minister of National Security saying that categories of crime are up. Don Saunders goes, well, that's just a reporter's opinion. What are you talking about? We're quoting Marvin Dames from the House of Assembly. How is a newspaper article that quotes someone word for word, something that was broadcast nationally, a reporter's opinion? You guys have to stop doing this, all right? Stop doing it. Stop twisting things that don't need to be twisted. There are categories that murders and armed robberies are up. It's a problem. Let's stop flipping out about it. Conduct the House of Assembly with a semblance of sense and logic so that people can respect that considerate people are actually governing our affairs. That is what I would like you to do. All right? Now, oh, we got text. Good afternoon, Mr. McCartney. The support staff of the Public Hospitals Authority has been without an industrial agreement since July 1, 2018. Due to the expiration of the former agreement, June 30th, 2018, the support staff are frustrated. Morale is at an all-time low, yet management and the BPSU appear to be doing very little to get this past due agreement signed. Management must know that the support staff is just as important as the doctors and the nurses, and the same sense of urgency to ensure that their contracts are current should be given to the support staff. I can smell a strike coming, and if that's what it takes to get the agreement signed, the staff will take that route. Well, that's unfortunate. I do hope that that does not happen. All right. Back to Don Saunders in the house, right? Not about Don Saunders. I know Don Saunders. He's cool. You know what I mean? But come on, guy. You got to think through these things better than that. We don't report opinions. We report facts. All right? You will see opinions and analysis included in the newspaper. But if it is an article that is being, and a story that has reporting in it, everything in it, we fact check. All right? And Moutry did this too. And I'm going to get to what I really wanted to get to. Moutry did this too when the PLP was saying that, not the PLP, sorry, Reese Chipman was saying that Peter Turnquest described the response to Dorian as a national embarrassment. And then Peter Turnquest gets up and goes, that's not what I said. That's not what I said. Right? And then they go, yeah, you did. You said it's the response to Dorian and Sweeting's key. Is no other way to describe it than a national embarrassment, right? By the way, that still isn't remedied, okay? And they produce an article written by, again, a Nassau Guardian article, written by assistant news editor of the Nassau Guardian, Travis Cartwright Carroll, that quotes Peter Turnquest directly saying what Peter Turnquest said. And Moutry, and strangely, Turnquest, although maybe he didn't have a chance to read what was written, Moutry says, oh, that's just the reporter's opinion. Stop talking garbage. We're reporting what was said in the House of Assembly over which you preside as Speaker. You don't know what they're saying? We watch it if you don't. Let's stop this culture of politics where you start doubting what is factual. All right? It's dangerous. You're doing it in the United States too now. You won't believe actual reporting. The United States media is, has their own role to play in that, right? Stop it. You get up and say these things in the House, and then you don't expect to hear them over again when you hear it thrown back at you. Oh, it's not true. It's a reporter's opinion. Y'all out of y'all minds. What are you talking about? Reporter's opinion. What do you think we're doing here? Anyway, it's annoying to me, all right, to no end. Do your thing. Do your politician job, which is to get up there and rah, rah, rah. But when you read it back, don't doubt that you said it. It says, Juan, what do you think about Miriam Emanuel? And her? Listen, okay, I can stop you right there, all right? Listen carefully to me. I can stop you right there. All right? The last time, let me say this first, right? The ability to communicate clearly and effectively is a prerequisite in public life. I ain't talking about Miriam Emanuel. I'm talking about everybody. If you can't communicate clearly and effectively, then public life is not for you. Period. There are other ways you can serve. It's part of the job. Okay? That's all there is to it. But I'm going to say this to you. All right? I'm going to say this to you. And I want you to hear me real well. Figure out what it is that you want. Do you want your public officials open, to public scrutiny or not. Because the last time that Mayor Emanuel did this, everybody came to mess with me, right? I got some lunatic wrote a letter to the editor. They're appalled at my attack on Mayor Emanuel. Like, I did it, right? All I'm doing is talking about it. I did it. I'm the elected official who went up there and did it. So figure out what you want. You want them to do whatever they want to do and nobody speak about it and nobody critically analyze it or whatever like that. Figure out what you want, because last time y'all came for me, like I did it. All I'm doing is talking about what was said publicly. So leave me alone, right? Let her deal with that. Let the people of MyCal deal with that. And y'all figure out what is acceptable to you. Don't get me in that, because y'all like to put me on the barbecue pit. Like, I be doing these things. Like, I spending public money and all this. Sorry, it's Friday. Maybe the stresses of the work week have gotten to me. Don't get me in that, okay? If you have a commentary about it, fine. Me, leave me alone, all right? Last time, y'all come to attack me like I did it, all right? So if that's acceptable to you, then you deal with it. Me, leave me alone. All right. Let's talk about what I wanted to talk about, all right? So back to the House of Assembly. All right, back to the House of Assembly. So the budget debate, as I said to you, someone had asked me earlier this week, and it was before Dwayne Sands spoke, and I'm waiting to hear from a couple others. I want to hear from Pintard, Bannister I want to hear from, you know. D'Aguilar I'm waiting to hear from. You know, of course, I'm going to pay attention to the primary. I'm going to watch everybody, right? So I watched, when I leave here and the budget debate's on, let's turn on in my car the budget debate. All right? but tell me don't stress out. You're right. I won't get stressed out. But I just find it odd how people come and drag me into it. But like, that's some misogynistic attack on Mayor Emanuel. Nah, leave me alone, eh? Y'all deal with it. That's what you're dealing with? Go deal with it. When I leave here, I listen to the budget debate on my car. I go home, much to the chagrin of, my kids or whatever. I'm paying attention to the budget debate because that's my job. I have to monitor what public officials are saying, right? So other than a few spots, I didn't find a lot of substantive information or analysis in the budget debate. Of course, you know, Chet Cooper always does his own work, and the Prime Minister's presentation was incredibly meaty to me. I enjoyed Jeff's presentation. I'm a fanboy with Jeff. So when he's talking, I find what he's saying incredibly interesting. And so I always enjoy his presentation because he's effective. He can communicate effectively, right? And a couple others I found some meat in, you know. But Dwayne Sands gave a really good presentation, and he looked at the budget. And Peter Turnquest last night, all right, to me, gave, even though I disagree with some of the things he said, he gave the best analysis of the budget in terms of the critical areas that I've heard so far in this debate. All right? I don't agree with everything he said, and we'll talk about it, but he gave the best analysis to me in terms of, you can look at it, even though he still put his F&M slant on it, even though you could, he gave an analysis where he says, you can look at this, right, and you can read his speech and go, okay, now he's taking me through what they're trying to do, all right, and laying out what he says their strategy is. I don't think there's a real plan, but okay. But he gave a very good breakdown. I want to talk about some parts of it, but I did say it's an open line, so let me allow you to comment. Is this on? I don't hear anything. There we go. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hey, Vaughn. What's up, my brother?
Hey, what's happening?
Man, listen. The Vaughn McCartney ain't no use a warrior, man. No need to apologize, man. Mr. McCartney, let me help you out today. If you elect these people and they have a problem with reading and writing, that ain't Vaughn's problem. If you're a reporter and something happens in the House of Assembly and you report what happened or you read something from an article of the papers and you decide to come on your talk show and host and talk about it, why people won't get mad?
Boy, I don't know. I really don't get it.
Hello, would they need to get mad with or get upset? Take that person who has a problem with figures. Instead of putting figures, write down the letters. If it's $1 million, write down $1 million. Don't write down the numbers. That's all.
Yeah.
But I keep telling people, when you want people to talk good about this government, tell the government to do good. And I think that persons like myself who not like to be biased, I will call your talk show numerous times that I will speak out about this government doing good. But if they continue to do wrong and continue to do bad, what do other people supposed to do? Just pity pat them on the back and say, hey, do it again. Great.
I guess, man, you know, just it's about me now.
Yeah,
right?
I see a lot of things.
I just leaving it alone because I got called all kind of misogynist and unfair.
I feel it in my heart. I know you for years, and I feel that you have some sort of realness in you. And at times when the PLP was in power, you'd even bash me. So, hey, that don't get between us. And I continue to say to you, in particular, as long as you have that platform to speak out for the poor people and speak out for the needs of the people in this country, I bet you 100%. You have a blessed weekend. You be safe this weekend, my brother.
Thank you, my friend. Okay, that's fine. Let's go to the another phone line. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Juan McCartney.
Hey, what's happening?
Frederick McAlpine has summed it up, and it took place right moments after, hours after he gave his speech. Like, if what you reported what happened last night inside those chambers, you know, those are the type of people that are there, and they are displaying who they are. You know, thanks for letting me share, my brother.
Okay, buddy. We got another call? That's fine. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello, good afternoon. Are you there? No, they're not there. All right, you can call us back. I did tell you you could have an open line. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. So, Peter Turnquest, right? We got another call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello, good afternoon. Are you there? No, just I didn't take long at all to answer it. Good afternoon. Are you there? Okie dokie. Listen. I'm going to read your text in a moment. Let me just say this, because it's going to be difficult to maybe do an open line and dig into the meat of what Turnquest was saying at the same time. When you get to a budget debate, and you're a member of parliament, and you start drifting into the realm of what is strictly political, it really lets me know that you don't really have any idea what you're talking about. And I'm not going to call any names, right? But we hear a lot of just talking points, talking point. No other government did this, and no, da, 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 da. And you, when I hear that is the heart of your contribution, and then you start taking me back to the PLP era, way 20, 30 years ago, right? I understand that you don't actually have the mental discipline, apparently, to digest and dissect and formulate an analysis of what it is that you're there to do, right? To look at the budget. And so I tune certain people out. I listen to everybody, but I start discrediting them as people to take seriously when they just start running on with garbage, right? A good MP, all right? A good member of parliament will do his or her homework, all right? Chester Cooper did his homework. Dwayne Sands did his homework. Peter Turnquest did his homework. All right?
he has apparently slaked his bloodlust for Brave Davis during the mid-year budget debate, and he got down to business, right? And I respect it, and I like it, and he said some very critical things that I think we should be looking at. But first, let me take a phone call. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Revolution.
Cardi, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. What's up?
All right. First of all, I love everybody because God made all nations one blood. You cannot go to no nations and build shiny towns. They're not going to love it. The Creator God set up human government. No judge or magistrate has a power over the government. Government have a job to do, and the government must do their job. All the shiny towns in the Bahamas must come down. No human rights people have no authority over the Bahamas government. Government have a job to do, and the government must do their job. Thanks, Mr. McCartney.
Okay.
Have a blessed and safe day.
All right, buddy.
Okay.
Thank you. Got another phone call. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Revolution.
Good afternoon, Mr. McCartney. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. How's it going?
I'm good, good, good. Mr. McCartney, you intend to give those people those speeches just before they get up to speak?
I don't know, man.
Because I tend to give them those speeches just before it's speaking time, and they don't have time to go over this and read these things, you know. Boy, this don't make no sense. I'm serious. This ain't making no sense. But anyway, what I call about Mr. McCartney, mm-hmm. You see how the MPs and the cabinet ministers fork everything over to the competent authority, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
You think they should be getting paid? Because if they give all their rights up to the competent authority, he's the only one making all the decisions, so they say, because then they get up there and please them right or wrong.
No, I mean, you make a good argument, you know, so... We could explore that, yeah. A pay cut since they're forking over responsibilities. They're neglecting their responsibility to legislate their way through this. And to the extent that you fork that over to the Prime Minister, perhaps you're not doing all of your job. Yep. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Revolution. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes, I would like to, I'm not quite sure if I understood something that the Minister of Security said mm-hmm. when he said that the government gained over $1 million in fines or fees from the COVID. Was that correct?
I don't know the exact number, but yes, he was talking along. He was speaking about the money that they got from COVID, yes.
He did not say it exactly. He just said, I think well, he might have said, but I understand him to say over $1 million. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, did most of that $1 million come from the poor people or those people who were trying to make a living because they did not have a job because of the closure?
Yeah,
of
probably.
This country.
Probably that, and businesses they find, you know, for being occupied, over-occupied, and having people indoors and stuff like that.
But they didn't announce on the radio the businesses they find. Usually, it was that fella selling the coconut water that was paraded on television, or that fella who was sitting down, sleeping in his car, going to the pump for water. And you find them, and you're bragging about the money that you, the million of dollars that you made of these poor people, and then you come into the next couple of months and say, vote for me. What sense does that make?
Well, they're going to say they did it for your own good because you're children and, you know, you couldn't govern yourselves properly and getting water from the pump, you're going to catch COVID, so let me arrest you and fine you because you don't have the capacity to use your common sense. So that's what that was about. And it's not difficult to get there to $1 million either, if you think about it. If you fine 1,000 people, right, that's a base, the fine was around $300, right, for face mask. That's $300,000. And they were finding people left, right, and center. But, you know, even though the police could demonstrate some leniency, I wouldn't blame the police per se. I would blame the people who put the police up to it. All right? Says, hey, Juan, I like how you handle that, bro. I'm a regular listener to your show. You're the best. Thank you. All right. Now, back to Peter Turnquist. And I see your text. I'm going to get to him. He did his homework, and I respect it, okay? I wouldn't expect anything less, right? Now, the issue, though, I find odd is that Peter Turnquist was essentially talking about, He was essentially saying to critics of the revenue projections and that he constantly hears, you didn't meet your revenue projections. He says that, he finds that odd because they can't control what people spend. And fair enough, you know what I mean? And he is essentially saying that the government can't control it significantly other than from a policy level, which I agree with. But if you know you can't control it and you know that the projections have been coming in under, shouldn't you trend toward being more conservative with your projections? Wouldn't you, in your sensitivity analysis, say, look, let's factor in worst case scenario, because we've been in the worst case scenario a couple of times in the recent future? So I hear you. You say that, you're looking on, you can't control it. But my problem with this is that you're projecting revenue that I believe is just overly optimistic. And yeah, you consult with the central bank and Ministry of Finance, but at the end of the day, you make the determination. He's not the Minister of Finance, but the Minister of Finance will make the determination. Here's where we're capping it, right? Here's where we're capping our revenue projection, and here's where we certainly can control expenditure. Here's where we're capping expenditure. What has happened is they have been, in my opinion, again, overly optimistic with revenue projections, even if you talk to the central bank, whomever, right? And I think that the central bank differs a bit in the growth projections, but you've been overly optimistic with revenue projections, in my opinion, while at the same time, you are ramping up expenditure. A lot of things have to go right for you not to be badly off, and we incur even more debt because we have to cover the deficit. So I get that sensible professional people have looked at these things and have given them their analysis, but to me, I think you should be more conservative in your revenue estimations and therefore be more conservative in your spending projection and your spending. All right? So I think that they didn't do a good job in this budget of that. That's just my opinion. All right? I know there are many sensible, very smart people who work at the Ministry of Finance. Mind you, the same people worked at the Ministry of Finance before when Peter Turquoise said that they weren't doing things properly, but that's neither here nor there. So I think they didn't do a good job of being more realistic with the revenue projection and balancing that against their expenditure. Because you're gonna, if you think, well, hey, we're getting all this more money, the government's gonna find a way to spend the money. All right, let's go to a break and we'll be back.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Back for a limited time at Popeyes. Come in and get your ripping chicken today. Enjoy an all-white meat chicken breast, partially cut into pull-apart strips, which are slow marinated in a blend of Louisiana seasoning, then hand-battered into a crispy southern breading and deep-fried. Rip this special out of any Popeyes today, along with two signature sides, a biscuit and sauce for just $7.50 fat-inclusive.
Love that chicken from Popeyes.
Travel less, but vacation more by indulging yourself and your family with the ultimate staycation getaway at Atlantis. Sleep in, relax, play, go out. Say yes to a fantastic staycation in your very own paradise just over the bridge. For reservations, call 363-6483 or visit Atlantis Local on Facebook for details.
We'll be right back.
Good afternoon, Bahamas. Welcome back to the Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. We're balancing out, speaking about Peter Turnquist's contribution to the budget debate in the House yesterday, former finance minister, and also conducting an open line show. If this becomes difficult, that is totally my fault. Let's go to the phone line. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Revolution. Hello. Good afternoon.
Good day, Warren. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, man. It's very hard to take Peter Turnquist seriously when he was the Minister of Finance and he disbanded the Revenue Enforcement Unit. During his period, you know, they changed the Customs Officer's title to Revenue Collection Officer. And then he disbanded the Revenue Enforcement Unit, in which now he is trying to be duplicitous and saying that we need a form of IRS in the Bahamas. Well, we had that in the Revenue and Enforcement Unit, which was created underneath the Progressive Liberal Party. I go forward to say that they disbanded that unit because that unit was going after many high-profile cases, and one in which I was pursuing personally when we had a particular company that was declaring a lower rate of duty on imported drinks up into the millions of dollars which they were taking away from the Bahamian economy. I sent a letter to Peter Turnquist myself, documented and contacted the financial secretary about it. 3 years later, I just got a contact from Customs saying that they received notice of this case. And nothing has still yet come out about it. So I say, you know, you have to take what they say with a grain of salt, because on one point to the public, they try to make it seem that they want to collect revenue, but it seems that they only want to collect it from the poor, from the coconut boys, from the persons that go into the pump, for the persons that are trying to take care of their grandfathers, their grandmothers, to the persons trying to sell crab during the pandemic because there are no other streams of revenue. And so I have to say, let's just take everything what they're saying right now as elections off, election bribery, and they're not serious about what they're trying to do.
Okay, appreciate you. Now, the Ministry of Finance, if you ask Marlon Johnson, he'll tell you the Revenue Enhancement Unit is there. And I want to talk about that, all right? I want to talk about not specifically that, but I want to talk about what he said about tax collection, because I think it's important, all right? And we're going to get to that, too. He said many things. We'll talk about some of them. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Revolution. Hello, good afternoon. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
A godly day to you and, of course, this dark universe.
Yes, sir. Okay.
One, what I want to say before I make my main point. You does a good job. And I hope you won't go any place soon because you'll be educating the people. Many things I sometimes doesn't get a full understanding of. You come on the radio and make it so simple.
Oh,
and I appreciate you not only for that.
Oh, you
always have a good show.
Thank you.
In spite of. Thank you for that. But what I want to say, right? First, I want to say, if it's two people right now should get back in the House of Assembly, it's Hannah, what's her name? Glennis Hannah Martin, and Warren Miller. They speak on behalf of the Bahamian people, and they don't, what you would call, I mean, they don't jive. And I love them for that. And I hope people put them back in the House of Assembly. Now, Bannister, right? Bannister got to realize that when he go to court and poor and with those rich people, and when the poor people are the plaintiff, he needs to know justice in spite of what he had done in Abaco, because If I'm going off, you could just let me know. Hello?
Yeah, go make your point for me.
Yeah. I am being to court with some people, right? And they hired him for their lawyer. You know what he say? The people got a big food store like that. Anything to do.
Okay. That's is that in the national interest, what you're saying, or is that something particularly personal and peculiar to you? It sounds like it is, and therefore, you know, let's move on. Let me just say this before I take another phone call.
Peter Turnquest talked about tax collection in a very meaningful way. He talked about a lot of things in a meaningful way. Tax collection in a very meaningful way. Fairness in it. Fairness in revenue. I'm sorry, fairness in spending. Tax dollars. All right? And we're going to talk about that. And he also talked critically about our debt situation. Now, he said some things that didn't give me a great deal of comfort. Well, he said some things that when he said them, you go and you try to research what he said to look for it to make sense to you. I did that, all right, because he talked about the debt management plan and the fiscal strategy report, so we're going to talk about that. We still got another hour. I did that, but I don't get the level of comfort he sought to get from what I saw, and we're going to talk about what I saw, all right? But let's take a phone call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hello?
Hello, yes.
Good day, sir. I was just passing by the park, right, where we do the national tattoo.
Yes.
I would see that you see the people practicing for the tattoo now, but they're practicing putting up our flag on the pride flag, right?
Who?
I don't know. There's some ladies over there practicing, I guess, for the upcoming tattoo thing. And
I don't know nothing about that. But what do you? You can tell me your feelings about it. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm just trying to find out now. Are we doing this willingly, or are we forced to do this?
Forced to do what?
I don't know. To be flying around this flag.
No, ain't nobody forcing nobody to fly no pride flag.
I'm not saying that it's going to be at our tattoo, but if it is our government just doing this openly, or?
I don't know how the government can ban the pride flag if someone feels like flying it.
Not ban it, but
you're going to have to, I don't know if you can get the government involved in that. You're going to have to look at your own personal mores and figure out what you support, while at the same time realizing that not everybody holds your same opinions and values with regard to the LGBT community. All right, and that'll you'll rest a lot easier. You'll release yourself from a lot more stress if you just begin to understand that the LGBT people are here and they have a community and they want to see more representation of their community, but that doesn't mean you have to support their particular views. All right? That's as much as I can help you with that. I don't know why they would fly a pride flag during the tattoo. Are we even having the tattoo? Is that going to happen this year? Good afternoon. Welcome to the... No? Okay, fine. All right. This is my fault. I did say open line when I actually had something specific I wanted to talk about. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello, good afternoon.
Oh, yes, good afternoon, Juan. How are you doing?
I'm good.
This was the open line, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, because I know everybody talking about the budget. But, Juan, for me, I want to know again, speaking, I guess, more specific as pertains to the road traffic. I do have a problem. I don't know with the sidewalks. I'm trying to figure out. We have a lot of businesses on Wolf Road. And prior to the sidewalks, these businesses, which are right next to one another, that has no parking spaces, but they give them licenses to have their businesses. You used to be able to park opposite them on the other side of the street there, and there wasn't no sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
You park on the sidewalk now, the police will give you a ticket for parking on the sidewalk.
Right.
But now you took away the parking space on the opposite side of the street. Where are the people supposed to park to kind of patronize these businesses?
Now, that's a good question, but I also don't support people parking on the sidewalk. Okay. Because the sidewalks.
And my other comment I wanted, I'll say my comment first and then I'll hang up and listen. Also, when is it going to come? Now, you know, the police like to ticket you for a lot of stuff on the streets. But it seems to have become the norm now that if you are turning right into a corner, that the cars coming out that corner in a two-way lane would come center-wise and turn their cars to block you from coming in just so they can come out.
Right, yeah.
I mean, that is specifically, I can see the police them really taking an issue with that. They take issue with so much other things. But that seemed to have become the norm. They're going to force you who have the right-of-way to wait on them by being in the middle and turning their car so that you are unable to turn just to let them out, and then three, four other cars trying to push their way through.
Right.
I mean, we need to have some type of type of order on the streets.
Yeah, you know what?
And I think this would cause a lot of accidents too.
Yeah. I think I figured this out. You know, because firstly, 97.5% of people who drive on New Providence don't know what they're doing, all right? Or just don't care, yes? 97.5%, right? 2.5% actually care about others and human life and, you know, they're being responsible for their own actions. It is that, I believe, we have developed a culture where in certain instances, if someone is not there to make sure that we act right, we choose not to. All right? Now, what that says about us as a people, you know, you can draw your own conclusions. Okay? So our culture has come to the place where unless someone is enforcing things, people just go and do whatever they want. Right? In a lot of instances. And TurnQuest even talked about this in terms of there are responsible people who are paying their real property tax, but we got to deal with the other people. And I want to talk about that in detail. So it's going to be less difficult to change what I perceive to be our entire culture of disregard for the traffic laws than it will be to get the police to actually enforce the traffic laws, right? So here's what I suggest. Instead of everybody collectively just learning or caring about what they're doing on the road, I suggest the police make it a priority to enforce the traffic laws because they're being flagrantly disregarded in a manner that is frightening. All right? So please, let's do that. Let me do some texts. Give me another minute. No? All right, fine. Let's go to the news. We're going to come back. We'll deal with your text. We'll talk about Peter Turnquest. I'm going to block out some time just to talk about Turnquest stuff. All right, stay tuned.
In life, there are always challenges. Today, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we are committed to our customers by providing cost-effective insurance solutions. No matter what your insurance needs, we will always be here for you. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Hello, sir. Your credit card bill is due. Hello, sir. It's time for your monthly loan payment. Tired of creditors pounding at your door? Sign up for a debt consolidation loan from Fidelity Bank and consolidate your debt into one low monthly payment. What's more, you'll also earn interest on a built-in savings account. The pandemic has curbed many freedoms, but at Fidelity, our focus is to help regain your financial freedom. Visit a branch or speak to Fidelity Bank at 356-7764. COVID safety measures in place at all branches. Fidelity, we're good for you.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Wait, why you look so mashed up, like clothes at the washer?
No, wait, just a hard day. Wait,
hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritty.
We need to start joking with everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Wait, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave his boy one big, big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody's saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crack Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody knew you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Travel less, but vacation more by indulging yourself and your family with the ultimate staycation getaway at Atlantis. Sleep in, relax, play, go out. Say yes to a fantastic staycation in your very own paradise just over the bridge. For reservations, call 363-6483 or visit Atlantis Local on Facebook for details.
Marlin Marine is going digital to better serve you. Check out our digital showroom at marlin-marine.com or visit our Facebook page and select shop to view our stock, speak with a sales agent, or request a quote. Be prepared this hurricane season with our lineup of Generac portable and standby generators. Our diesel and LP standby generators give you clean, uninterrupted power, while our portable generators provide convenient power where you need it, keeping you connected no matter the conditions. Find the Generac that best suits you. Contact Marlin Marine today and our sales agents will be sure to help. Call 393-7873, visit marlin-marine.com, and follow our social media pages to stay updated on our latest products. When the power cuts out, Generac steps in. So get your Generac generator today at Marlin Marine, giving you power on land and sea.
Good afternoon, Bahamas. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio. I'm Mom McCartney. So good to have you with us. We got an open line, but before we get back to that, we want to discuss some of the things that Peter Turnquest said, because he's a former finance minister. He understands these things. And he made some interesting points that I want to get to. And one of the things I'm going to discuss before I get into anything else is debt. All right. Now, I think that, and it's my opinion, my analysis, I think that we have been done a disservice during the budget debate by not being given a full understanding of our exact debt position and what that position is going to be moving forward and how that's going to impact the country. All right? Now, Dwayne Sands looked at it, and he's looked at it all. He's like, write it all down. Contingent liabilities, right? Everything, even the stuff that's not funded. So, Peter Turnquist yesterday, even though he himself called the revenue projections aggressive, says that said that he doesn't essentially think we will have an issue with regard to debt if we re-examine our state-owned enterprise funding, which is somewhere around $250 million alone this year, and if we follow what he says, let me not say what he said, if we follow the fiscal strategy plan, it's a plan, they have it, it's written down, right? So he said, if you're concerned about the debt management, or he says he hears a lot that there's no debt management plan. So he says, if you go to the fiscal strategy report, there's a debt management plan. Okay. Peter Turnquist did his homework. I did mine. He says, not going to be a problem. And the main concern about our debt is that we've taken on so much foreign debt. That means that when it comes time to pay back this debt, particularly this is medium-term debt, a lot of it, particularly with regard to the principal balloon repayments, that's going to start taking hundreds of millions of dollars a year in foreign currency to pay that back. And to the extent that our reserves are depleted, even if the economy grows, because the tourists are coming back and we're spending money abroad to feed them and do other stuff, right? To the extent that the foreign reserves are depleted, it's going to be challenging to pay that back. And that's why people are saying, look at this thing seriously. And I'm not saying he's not taking it seriously. What I'm saying is he is, in my estimation, overly confident in the debt management strategy. So here's where we are, all right? And also I want to note before I go any further that he said that we have far more internal debt than external debt. Now, he said far more. He said it more than once, right? Now, I'm going to disagree with him and say that the numbers released by the Ministry of Finance don't say that, all right? So total public debt 2019, I can't take, I'll if you could call back for me in 5 minutes, all right? I want to get through this. If we look at, if the numbers for 2019, total public debt, all right? This is $7,733,000,000, 2019. 2020, total public debt grew to $8,692,800,000, okay? In 2021, total public debt grew to $9,878,400,000. In 2022, we're projected to be at $10.4 billion, all right? Now, he says that we have much more internal debt than foreign debt, but here's what the Ministry of Finance says. In 2019, when total public debt was $7.7 billion, $5.1 billion was in local currency, and $2.56 billion was in foreign currency. So in 2019, he was right. Yeah? That's twice, right? That's double the internal debt than external debt. But in 2020, when we had $8.692 billion in total debt, local currency, we owed $5.163 billion. Foreign currency, we now owe, we owed $3.529 billion. So it grew by almost $1 billion in foreign debt in 1 year, right? While local debt stayed the same. He said far more local debt than foreign debt. Now, you could look at that number, 5.16 versus 3.52, and depending on how, you know, you look at it, you could say, yeah, well, it's almost $2 billion more, right? Like $1.5, $1.6 billion more. So that there's an argument to be made that there's far more debt. However, let's look at 2021, when the debt grows to $9.878 billion, right? Local currency debt, $5.006 billion. Foreign currency debt, $4.871 billion. Now, to me, when we in the realm of billions, all right, a difference of about $130 million, when we talk in billions, doesn't suggest to me that there's far more local debt than foreign debt. In fact, it's just not, right? 2022, though, let's examine this and explain what the strategy is, right? 2022, where the debt's going to grow again, right? It ain't going the other way, right? Which is what he wanted ultimately, but, you know, it is what it is now. 2022, debt grows to 10.4 billion dollars. Okay? Among that, remember, it's 9.8, it's going to 10.4 total, right? Local, we're going from 5.006 to 5.9 billion local. Foreign, we're going from 4.8 billion to 4.5 billion. So it's going down, right? Let me do this and then I'll explain to you where we're at. 2023, debt's going to grow again. Total public debt, $10.5 billion. All right? That's not bad. That's an immense slowing of debt growth. Will it happen? You know, that's the strategy, right? We're going to go to $10.57 billion in total public debt. Local debt now grows from $5.9 billion to $6.2 billion. Foreign debt goes from $4.5 billion to $4.3 billion. So not much going on, right? But let's look at what happens in 2024. So now you're getting 6.2 local, 4.3. You get into the realm of, yeah, okay, there's far more, right? It's easier to manage that. We're going in 2024 from 6.2 billion in 2023 to 7.2 billion in local debt. From foreign currency, we're going to plummet. The plan is, anyway, because 2023 and 24 haven't happened yet. We're going to plummet from 4.3 billion external foreign debt to 3.4 billion. So we're going to transfer almost $1 billion in foreign debt into local debt, which is good because local debt is amortized over a longer period and therefore the interest rates will be low. All right? When you have a longer term loan, the interest rate is lower because the risk is not as high, right? Fine. By 2025, we are going to go from and that's a total of 10.6 billion. It's still going up, by the way. In 2025, we're going to go from 10.6 billion total to 10.98 billion total in total public debt, right? We're going to go from 7.2 billion in local debt to 8.073 billion. In local debt, and we're going to go from 3.4 billion in foreign debt to 2.8 billion in external debt, all right, in 2025. So we're going to shed several hundred million dollars more in debt, and that's mainly because some of that debt's going to come, principal repayments will come due around then, if I'm not mistaken. So here's the strategy. Right? The strategy is to shift the debt burden, because right now, so Peter Turnquist, you and I disagree. The numbers don't show this. Right now, we don't have far more local debt than foreign debt. It's not that far apart, right? You're seeking to change that very rapidly on a rapid scale. We'll see how that goes. We're seeking to go from, right now, we have parity, pretty much, from the numbers here. All right, we're going to go from just about an equal amount of local and foreign debt to 80% local debt, right? About 80% versus about 20%. No, about 75%, right? Versus about 25% debt. Now, to do that, to me, it's tricky, right? That's a best case scenario that you're going to walk a real tight rope for a number of years in order to get there, all right? A pertinent question we should ask ourselves, too, is a pertinent question we should ask ourselves, too, is there that amount of liquidity and appetite for government debt locally? I know we're liquid. Does it stay that way through 2025? So we haven't had an honest, serious, in my mind, conversation about this roadmap. All right? Turnquest didn't get into it. He only had an hour. Right? So, but he said, go to the fiscal strategy report. I'm looking at your fiscal strategy. And to me, it's doubtful. All right? It doesn't give me confidence that the confidence that you sought to give during your budget presentation. So the former finance minister, who I regard as being worlds ahead of the current finance minister with regard to finance, didn't give me comfort, and certainly the current finance minister didn't give me comfort. The Minister of State for Finance is just where you put me, right? So I wanted to explain to you what we're looking at with, and you can give me your thoughts. I wanted to do that. I didn't take your calls or read your texts, but that's where we are. And I don't know if it's achievable, man. I mean, there are people much smarter than I am looking at these things, but just from me looking at it, right? My analysis, and I only speak on this because I've analyzed these things for a number of years now. I don't see it. I don't see a $3 billion local debt demand being realized in years. Right? That's me. I could be wrong. All right. We go to phone line. Some text messages. Peter Turnquest said some other things I want to talk about, with which I agree. All right? This, I don't agree. All right? Good afternoon, the revolution.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hello, bro. Hey, what's happening, buddy?
Right here, man. Fuck yeah. Good afternoon to the nation. Look, yeah, this is an interesting, very, very interesting. I'm listening to you, right? Mm. You get me clearly, what?
I got you. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm listening to you, right? I'm working on some stuff over here, right? And then I hear you start talking with them numbers. I got the paper to be. And I just start scribbling, right, what?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm all over the place because I'm working with a paper that's a part of a program, which I took some pictures for. So let's look at what you just discussed, one right quickly, and then please I have a point that I wanted to make.
Go ahead.
Okay, great. So you're saying in 2019, and I'm only going to focus on the foreign debt for the time being.
Right.
The foreign debt was $2.56 billion, right?
Correct.
Then in 2000, these are factors that we could account for. Based upon what's already happened, we can also examine what level of performance the economy was at, especially as it relates to the biggest level of foreign currency for us, being tourism, lining that up with the fact that we were experiencing record-level tourism visitation to the country, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly, because what this foreign debt has grown because of borrowing, not because of tourism inflows.
Right.
Our foreign reserves have grown, sorry, because of borrowing, not because of current.
Absolutely. And so we had 2019, where we had record levels of tourism coming. And then 2020, we had very decent and strong performances in tourism again. Right? And the debt went from 2.56 to 3.52, as you pointed out. That's a nearly $1 billion in foreign borrowings, right?
Yeah.
And then you skip over to 2021, right, which is what we're in right now. Increase to $4.8 billion, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a $1.3 billion increase in foreign borrowings, right?
4.8, really.
Right, 4.87, mm-hmm. almost 4.9, right? So that's a $3 to nearly $4 billion in increase, which is a massive increase. To $1.4 billion increase, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then one, we go over to interesting. And so we move from $4.8 billion in 2021, where we know we've been suffering over the last, because the country has been shut down and because the complete reverse in tourism performance, tourism coming into the country, right, Juan?
Mm-hmm.
And so we are now in 2000, and realizing, Juan, this is increasing every year from 2019, come down to 2021. We are now up to $4.871 billion based on the numbers you call out. So we skip over to 2022. How in the world are we going to go from 4.871 billion in 2021 of foreign debt to, what is it, $4.5 billion, a decrease, an actual decrease when tourism performance is still very weak when we need airlift, when we have a problem in Abaco, when we have a problem in Grand Bahama, and these also provide strong tourism performances for the country. When we have a challenge, we still have an ongoing challenge with shutdowns in our country. I'm trying to figure out how in the world they are projecting when in 2019, when we have some 2022, they're now projecting a decrease. 2023, they're now projecting a decrease. What in the world is going on? This seems like financial gymnastics that is being presented to Parliament One.
Yeah.
In all honesty.
I don't know that this is achievable. Yeah.
It makes absolutely no financial, logical, or analytical sense. It is completely improbable. It's irrational that the government of the Bahamas, based on its heavy reliance on tourism, based on its poor performance in terms of proactively pursuing the rebound of tourism in our country, is going to meet any of these debt repayment targets that it has set right now based upon the numbers that you provided. In any event, what I wanted to call in for, can I make my point that I really wanted to call in for?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I just got a little... Boy, there's some serious trouble in this country. But also, adding on top of that, right? When you listen to the communication from the Minister of Public Service, right, Bransel Rowell, he spoke about, as a matter of fact, he's challenging the Department of Statistics. Isn't that amazing? The very statistics provided by the Department of Statistics.
No, he's not challenging the Department of Statistics, you know. You know what he's doing? Mm. He's trying to reconfigure reality, right? And he's doing it, and in my estimation, he's doing it intentionally to mislead the public because he knows better, all right?
Absolutely. That's the point. He knows better, but he is deliberately seeking to mislead Parliament and the Bahamian people, knowing that an agency directly linked to the Ministry of Finance, the Department of Statistics, which all government departments, ministers, and business look for trustworthy info. As a matter of fact, he's bringing a reproach to the Department of Statistics with his push out. Now, one, getting to my final point. They went from firing and not renewing contracts and firing permanent and pensionable people, 2,500 civil servants, right? Later on in that very year, and they said that they saved $70 million in austerity measures. Later on in that same budget, they actually went beyond that $70 million that they claimed they saved, and they spent millions more in new hirees. They claimed that they want to hire anyone who was already retired from the civil service or anyone who was at a certain age making $70,000 or $100,000 or more. They went past that $70 million later on in their budget. Now we come to this final budget, what they're in right now, at a time when they first came to office, the country was performing half good, right, Mm-hmm. And they were seeking austerity measures to the tune of $70 million. Now, when the country is performing at its worst in the history of our country, they are hiring 1,000 civil servants. Is this government any good? We got to get rid of them. Thank you, Juan. God bless.
Okay. That was lengthy, unnecessarily so, but okay. let me go to our tax line. Let me give you guys some attention here. In fact, we can talk more about what Peter Hillenquist talked about next week, and we will, because he said some very serious stuff. So the problem I'm having now is believing politicians say, like any politicians say, like Peter Hillenquist, who after leaving the cabinet found his voice on some matter going against the government. I had much respect for some of them, but now I have the most respect for McAlpine because he stood for the people early in and never wavered. Well, I'll say this, and I won't respond to every single thing, but I'll say this, right? He now has leeway, now that he's outside of cabinet, to critique what comes out of cabinet. So I don't have a problem with that. I could talk about, after I read some text, I could talk about something I find interesting with what he said with regard to tax collection, though, that I believe, had he had the courage of his convictions, he could have made happen. All right? Because I don't see where the Minister of Finance couldn't do certain things that he's suggesting. I don't see what in law or in the Constitution, prevents the Minister of Finance from acting on some of the things that he said he suggested. This says, one, if anything, people complain that reporters hardly issue their opinions or ask questions, often just transcribing what politicians tell them. Yep, that's true. Or reporters don't do a deep dive of stuff. Wow, one, I got a bottle of Mr. Daniels and a bag of ice for you after the show. I don't want no Jack Daniels. Thank you, though. I prefer to stay out of prison. Juan, which house you think has more interesting debates, House of Assembly or the Senate? You know what? There are some good contributions in the Senate, but in terms of more bang for your buck, you're gonna go to the House, right? Carl Bethel gives good contributions. Fred Mitchell gives good contributions. Michael Darvill gives very spirited, at least, contributions. Dr. Michael Darvill. Afternoon, Juan. I would love to thank you and your donator for the help that was given to me back in February this year. I am residing with a church family, and I'm just days away from getting a business started by God's will. I'm really grateful for all of you for the prayers and encouragement. We will keep you updated, God willing. Mr. Fergie, a.k.a. the blind guy. Blessings. Well, that's great to hear. Great to hear. Good. Praise God. This says, hi, Juan. Politicians, in every sense of the word, has gone out the window with this government. It's not like the misadventures of a poorly led gang of... Hold on, I can't say this. It says, Bahamians have you as the goblin from Spider-Man when it comes to Mrs. Emanuel. Yeah, it's me. I'm the bad guy, right? So leave me alone. Don't ask me about it. Juan, why does this administration like the gaslight so much? It's pathetic. This is Juan, you won't name no names, but I'll name one, Renward Wells. LOL. Mrs. McCartney, can you ask the relevant authorities to finish the road work on the intersection of Blake and West Bay Street Road. That's still, I wondered what was going on with that too. Like, is that necessary? I thought it was pretty functional before. Let's go to a phone call if you're still there. And then we'll go back to some text. And we're going to talk about Peter Turnquest and tax collection today. We're going to touch it, even if we don't, you know, get to all of what I want to say about it. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Mr. McCartney, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good. How's it going?
Mr. McCartney, I get requests from you, right? Some people tell me who sell crabs, right?
Mm-hmm.
They want you to please tell Marvin Dames, let him make a living, okay?
Okay.
I mean, it's really deplorable how people didn't work for 9 months, people can't pay their bills, and Marvin Dames have the police run people from selling crab. I mean, you think that's fair?
I don't know that that's accurate that Marvin Dames is directing the police to run people from selling crabs.
We all know Marvin Dames. No, we all know Marvin Dames was boasting and bragging about the fines they collected. True or false?
Yeah, it's not a quiz, but go ahead. I said it's not a quiz. Go make your point for me.
No, but another thing, right? For God's sake, right? Tell these people, the Islamists, if you confess to be an atheist, you can't get mad to be criticized. You. Just a Christian nation. You can't have an atheist running the country affairs, okay? You can't have that, okay? The same year we can't have a man who was accused of fraud stuff, people money, running finance. That's why our luck so bad.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Last thing, Mr. McCartney, last thing but least, if the government didn't meet, I mean revenue, I mean projecting, when they cut things, you think they make it right now?
If they didn't, say that again.
No, listen to me. It's when they first came to power,
mm-hmm.
they never meet. Nothing they say. They always fall short. You remember that?
Yeah, something.
They fall short by $2 trillion. So, mm-hmm. So you think they can make it now?
No, I don't know. No.
So tell, and then Mr. McCartney, he's a finance man, right? Who do you think is the rapper? I mean, who do you think?
I'm not finance man.
Who do you think can rap you beat up? Who do you think you're doing?
I'm going to assume it's going to be Dr. Minnis, since Peter Turnquest already contributed.
I mean, but Dr. Minnis don't have idea.
Well, someone's going to write it for him. He ain't going to make writing
all
a speech.
Right, Mr. McCartney,
all right, I got to go. Let me ask you this very seriously, and I'm not an atheist. I'm a Christian, not of great one, but what does it matter if a public finance officer believes in God or not? Because I'm struggling to understand how House Inventory is making any sense whatsoever? Like, do you go to... Do I go to First Caribbean International Bank as a Christian, right? And go, do you believe in God, young lady, when you're depositing my check? Does it matter at all? Just as you are free to believe what you choose to believe, so are people free to choose not to believe. Now, I could see in some social capacity, if you prefer to have someone who's a believer handle your affairs, I could see if you say, well, I want the prime minister to guide the nation in a direction that I believe would be pleasing to God and under the moral mores of my Christian faith, I could see that. But the guy who's running the numbers got to believe in God for you? That don't make no sense to me. Anyway, good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Well, McGodney, you just asked the question of the atheist and the Christian. Okay, the atheist doesn't believe in grace and mercy. That Christian know about grace and mercy because he was given a second chance. Somebody died for him. Okay, and there is no tomb where that risen Savior dwells. He is risen from the dead. Mm-hmm. And therefore, those two sisters, grace and mercy, the atheist is benefiting from that also. Okay, that's the difference between the Christian and the atheist. And I'm a person that has been given a second chance at a same risen Savior. Thanks for letting me share.
Okay, now that's fine. That's the difference between Christian and an atheist. But I don't see how that informs how you calculate numbers, your capacity to do a technical job. I don't understand that. So am I to not give people who believe in the Rastafari faith jobs and technical positions? Is that now the barometer that we want to use? Your belief as a measuring stick for your capacity to do a technical job? I find it nonsensical. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hello.
Yes, hello. Good afternoon. Yeah, hello. Good afternoon.
Hey, Juan.
Hi, how are you?
Juan, I just have some breaking news. Hello, Juan.
Yes, go, you listening to the radio? Turn your radio down.
I just have some breaking news. You said Lord God was just robbed. Chastis on Wolf Road. So you said you want to report around there. There all kind of police cars around there now.
Chances on Wolf Road?
Yeah, you know, in front of Collins Avenue.
Okay, we will. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, appreciate it. Chances on Wolf Road was, according to this gentleman, just robbed. We will look into that to try to confirm the veracity of that. Although I'm going to have somebody look at it. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hey, Juan. Great show, Juan.
Thanks, man.
Juan, I could show you my transcript, my report card. I got perfect A's in every subject except religious knowledge.
Okay.
And the reason being, the religious knowledge teacher, she decided one day that she wanted to become a Christian and start trying to save everybody. And so I had to get on her case in a very nice way. So she gave me a satisfaction. But that's fine. I she couldn't see the fact that because I asked her to prove what she was teaching, she couldn't. And so we had a little issue. But Juan, you have a great show. And I like how you are very focused on your thoughts. You don't drift too much. And keep it up, buddy.
Thank you. Appreciate you. I'm going to do a few texts, and then we're going to talk about the tax collection and what Turnquest had to say about it. This says, McCartney, help me send belated birthday greetings to Sir Philip Davis. I believe Brave turned 70 years old Sunday past. I still believe he's the right on the best man to be the prime minister at this time. I think it is. Happy birthday. Happy belated birthday to Brave Davis. He turned 70 on, I think it was Monday, actually. He doesn't look 70. He's like one of those people who stop aging at a certain point. That's how they're going to look forever. Like Sir Arthur Folks. He's like in his 90s. He looks maybe 70, you know? Like, this says... One, have you watched network TV? Every show have a same-sex relationship in the show. Yeah, it's difficult terrain to navigate, particularly with children nowadays, because you're consuming the media from cultures that are quite similar but don't always align with perhaps all of your views. Mr. McCartney, the police no longer ticket persons for illegal parking right across the street from the Prime Minister's office. The workers double park on the median. The police pass every day and go straight by. Oh, okay. Good afternoon. Confusion is in the camp of the government of the Bahamas, and such things come into play when blind loyalty is allowed to overcome common sense, and all that is good. Indeed, it is a sad situation when the majority within neglects the majority without that afforded them the opportunity to get elected into Parliament. Juan, hoping this text finds you in good health. Juan, I put it to you that the budget is made up of three things: strings, hope, and soon. Yeah, we heard some soon there, yeah. Juan, you know we ain't having no tattoo this year, next year, but that ain't going down this year. Juan, this morning I drove to work, and on my daily commute, I see why you move in Freeport. I got a lot of heat yesterday over to your decision to go to Freeport because my fiance coworkers asked me why you treat Freeport. I tell them I've never met Juan before. I'm 100% sure I can't tell Juan where to move. So they asked me how come he did not say Long Island. And I told them because Long Island people is marry and date their own family. Oh, Lord. They do the Long Islanders like that. I'm from Eleuthera. I don't know why people keep saying, thinking I'm from Long Island. Says, hi, Juan. Paying the debt is going to be easy. When your grandson becomes PM, he will start with Grand Bahama and Abaco sold into slavery. Oh, Lord. Juan, Peter Turnquest is the last of the sour grapes. I need plain parts. I didn't hear any sour grapes. I mean, he was like, you know, threw a little shade when he talked about his constituency, but that's his right. Let's quickly take this call and then we'll go to a break. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hey, Juan.
Hey, what's up?
I keep forgetting, Lord, forgive me, please. I want to wish my leader, the Honorable Philip Brave Davis, leader of the of Her Majesty's Loyal Opposition, and the Progressive Liberal Party, and next Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, 2021 or two, a happy birthday. Mr. Davis, you know I support you. You know I love you dearly. And you know I got your back to the very end. No retreat, no surrender, PLP, all the way. Thank you, Juan.
Uh-huh. Let's take a break. You can't love him that much if you forgot his birthday. Let's go to a break. We'll be right back.
Did you know that $5 can get you delicious combos fit for a king? Well, it can, but only at Burger King Nassau. Not only is the big in-flavor flame-grilled Whopper Jr. combo you love available for just $5, but now you can enjoy a crispy chicken junior sandwich topped with bacon plus fries and a drink for only $5 as well. At Burger King Nassau, you get to choose between a chicken BLT or flame-grilled beef in two great combos that include fries and a drink for only $5, including VAT. Value has a new home at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
When you testify in court, you're expected to tell the truth. Same goes for your insurance application form. If you don't answer every question truthfully, you could be found guilty of misrepresentation. Leaving out just one piece of information on your insurance application can lead to misrepresentation. That means your insurance company could deny your policy or refuse to pay your claim. This message was brought to you by the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas, protecting the interests of policyholders.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. Someone asked me if Anton had a Brave phone number. I'm certain he does. I'm just playing. I'm sure if anyone loves Brave Davis, it's Anton. In an all-consuming, perhaps unhealthy. I'm just kidding. All right. Quickly, and then we're going to get more into this hopefully next week, and we're going to get more into Peter Turnquist stuff, just in terms of our thinking on these things, right? So, on speaking, now, Peter Turnquist slams subdivision plan, that's the headline of today's paper. I'm glad he said it, because when I said it, everyone got mad at me. You just don't like menace and all. All right. You're taking my tax dollars, because I'm going to be 45 in a couple of months. And will I still be able to apply if I'm 45? Or does it if you turn 45, you cut off? But anyway, let's say I'll be 46, right? You're taking my tax dollars to go and craft a community and give people benefits with my money that I'm not eligible for. Now, you could do that in some extreme circumstances, right? If we're all eventually going to benefit, right? So you give people old age pension and all this stuff. We pay into that as young people. That's fine. I'm eventually going to get it. But you can't take my money to just give someone a benefit that I don't have. I got to build my house and pay my taxes and pay for my land, and these people just get a bly. It's like some lottery. It don't make no sense, right? So I agree with him totally. But when I said it, it was a problem. But he said it, so y'all deal with him now. Okay, but that's not what I want to talk about. Peter Turnquist said yesterday that the government of the Bahamas should collect taxes without fear or favor. Now, he's talking about an amendment to the Real Property Tax Act, right? Where they want to second rent payments to be diverted to pay off outstanding balances for delinquent real property tax payers. All right? Peter Turnquist disagrees with this. All right? He said it's unnecessary, given the government already has a variety of ways to collect real property tax arrears. He says the bill likewise seems to cut against the fairness principle, and like mortgage or rental relief, seems to interfere in the tenant-landlord relationship. The bill seems to pass the responsibility for real property tax delinquency to the tenant versus the actual owner of the rental property under penalty of law. He said this cannot be right and what is intended. He says, I recommend a much more palatable collection effort for real property tax and a legal one, and not one that causes a tenant, a licensee, to be on the hook for the debts of someone else. He instead urged the government to enforce the existing real property tax collection laws with certainty of timelines and commitment, acknowledging that a mindset and cultural change was required to achieve this. He says the reason the IRS is so successful and feared is because they commit to definite timelines and certainty, and they act without fear and favor. We have to build that into our culture. It goes against political expediency and wanting to help people, but revenue management and collection has to be uppermost. It has to be all of this. The only way to get fairness and equity and collect what the state is owed. All right? So I'm in agreement with Peter Turnquist. I think that you should go ahead and use the existing Real Property Tax Act, which is already incredibly strong, right? So the government, through the Real Property Tax Act, has the first right of lien on your property, right? Before the bank, who you borrowed the money from to go get the property. All right? So the government could right now compel banks to, and they used to do this, pay the outstanding real property tax and then add it onto the mortgage, make the person who owes the mortgage pay it off. And in fact, that might be, that'll cause some pressure, but he's right. okay? And I don't like paying my real property tax, and I think I have, I think I don't, well, I certainly haven't paid it this year, but I will so far this year. But my question to Peter Turnquest is, why did you not do that when you were Minister of Finance? Why come after the fact and suggest a policy that, unless I'm mistaken, I'll go reread, I'll go dig back through the Financial Audit and Administration Act or the new Public Finance Management Act, and I'm going to have to see where he is prevented from shifting any policy in that direction. And he talked about challenges he faced, and I'm like, who? Challenges from who? Who, if the Minister of Finance says you owe real property tax, pay this, or we're going to put a lien on your property, he has the power to do that already. So why then did you not do that is what I have to ask you. And I want to talk about this more in depth in terms of the power of paying taxes and different tax structures, particularly when you talked about corporate taxes, et cetera. But I don't find it incredibly helpful, although I'm happy you brought it up. And I do agree with you that it's overreach, I believe, on behalf of the government to take the rent payments and make the person who's paying rent responsible for the landlord's delinquency. When you could go through the banks or you could do other stuff, or you could put a lien on people's property, man. It is what it is, right? You, with the IRS, you got to work with them. If you don't want me to take your property, you're going to sign an agreement and you abide by it. And if you can't abide by it, then the property's gone. And it just got to be that way, right? So that's where I am with that. We didn't get into it the way I wanted to, but I got to ask Peter Turnquest, then why didn't you do that, right? Why didn't you use the power that you had to achieve those ends? All right. This says, good afternoon, Juan. Just heard Minnesota say on Guardian Radio that vaccinated people may be able to stay out beyond curfew, and musicians who are vaccinated might be allowed to play music. Yeah. You know, case for vaccination becomes more compelling. You know. Good day, Juan. While Peter Turnquest's address was very well prepared, thorough, and most of it spot on, the part referring to the IRS-type agency and revenue collection was somewhat disingenuous. The unit that came closest to resembling the IRS agency was the Revenue Enhancement Unit, which by all indication was very successful. However, under Mr. Turnquest's leadership, the unit became dysfunctional, ineffective, and disbanded. Y'all keep saying it's disbanded. The Ministry of Finance people tell me it's still there. Juan, did I hear you say that Peter Turnquest referred to an F&M government's fiscal responsibility plan and that the country would be okay if the government followed it? Wow, and you didn't even comment or object to him referring to a plan as I expected, because I so often hear you spreading your PLP propaganda narrative that there was no plan. I don't know when you tuned in, but I went exactly through what they say the debt management strategy is, so I don't know what you're talking about. And I disagree with it. All right, so I disagree with the feasibility of it. It says, one, there is little to no appetite for local government debt. Investors are concerned about the country's fiscal position and are actually liquidating government debt. And pricing for government securities on the local exchange is flawed, and thus investors are not even taking up government bond issues. And see, that's where you're gonna run into some problems, because if your entire deal is hinged on investor confidence, you may find that it's not there. All right? Says, Juan, I wonder if the central bank governor knows the difference between a reserve and a contingent liability. Oh, of course. Has to be. Juan, not only are we heavy on foreign debt repayable in U.S. dollars, but we're paying a whopping 8.9% interest on the last borrowing, but central bank governor says our U.S. reserves are fine. Really? Yeah, I'm worried too. And he's much smarter than me, but I'm worried. Says, how come Minnesota is not at the G7? I thought those guys was all about to say the G7. My dude. Y'all can reach now. G7. They're just making up debt numbers, Juan. They know they won't be in office, so even though we jumped up nearly $3 billion in as many years, they just want to sprinkle a couple of million of debt in years 2023 and 2024. But new airports being built, Grand Bahama, Abaco, and Ragged Island development, but no increased debt. Yeah, right. They get an F. Teachers say, go back and redo your work. This says, good day, Juan. With respect to the Revenue Enhancement Unit, Marlon Johnson is being duplicitous. While the unit has not officially been dissolved, the unit mandate is no longer intact due to internal conflict and meddling. To support the fact, for the first time since the government has been delivering its budget address, this present budget address made no mention of the Revenue Enhancement Unit's revenue projections or collections. It says, Juan, have you seen what's happening in El Salvador as it concerns cryptocurrency, and in particular Bitcoin? Do you think we have any leaders in Parliament that at least think about things like cryptocurrency and its potential economic impact? We really need to be exploring all options. Now, yeah, I got to have Theo Savousis back on to further educate us on cryptocurrency. And I've seen some of what's going on in El Salvador. It's creative. Juan, please put Anton on the clock. It says, bro, the PM think this is a game. Him and Renwood Wells trying to take away my constitutional rights as a Bahamian. Why is he dividing the Bahamas with persons who vaccinated and those who are not? It's my rights as a Bahamian citizen to take the vaccine or don't take the vaccine without fear or prejudice against my will. This is a democratic country. I have constitutional rights. Yeah, we are going to get into that another time. I this whole shunning of those not vaccinated is getting worrisome. What's this vaccination day the PM talking about is pure discrimination? That it is. That it is. Yes. Good day, Juan. The person's belief has no bearing on his job. The gentleman in question is woefully inadequate in that position. People in the know in this country know that. Even an investment banker abroad in the USA knows that. Now, if you can't do your job, that's one thing. But it ain't nothing about your belief in God that is going to make you any better at some technical job. Last time I checked, Miriam Emanuel believes in God. Ask her about the numbers and see where we get with that. Oh, boy. Well, it wasn't me. All right. This says, exactly, Juan. When people in this country find out someone was an atheist, their heads explode. What does it matter? Are they applying to be a Sunday school teacher? Why people just act like the whole opposed in this country? You have to be a Christian. Is this a theocracy? Says we need a cutoff age for PM and DPM. Oh, now you're being ageist. All right. Someone I respect says you can't disagree with the plan unless there's a magic wand to wipe it away. We don't receive enough revenue to pay it, so refinancing it into manageable tranches is the most prudent way. Now, I don't disagree. I don't think that the plan is necessarily a bad one. I just doubt that it's going to be pulled off as planned. That's all. But I agree. You're going to have to refinance the debt into manageable tranches, hopefully at much lower interest rates. And the debt servicing will hopefully go down. But I'm not sold. Okay? So I don't get confidence from it. That's me. All right. All right. That's going to do it for the show. We tried to navigate discussing very serious matters as well as having a open line. And I think we did as best as we could. Says, why do we have or need real property tax at all? Not cash. Why do we need that vehicle? Well, you don't have to have it now. But where you need the money though, still. You know, so you gotta figure out what method of taxation is best. And we'll talk more about this next week. We gotta go though. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Z Live Off the Record is up next. I'm Juan McCartney. You guys have a great weekend and take care, Bahamas.